Welcome to Shoe Swap Food Conversations on CKVS 93.7 FM, the voice of the Shoe Swap. Host Warren Bell is here with a new season of local, regional, and international guests in conversation about getting our food system back to local, nutritious, high-quality foods that promote health, wellness, and sustainable communities. Now, here's your host, Warren Bell, to introduce today's guest.
And welcome, listeners, to another season, season four of Food Conversations. Before we begin, we acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkrepik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Now, today we are joined by two special guests who bought the farm, not figuratively, because that phrase is usually a euphemism for coming to a tragic end, but they actually, in real life, bought a farm. And as a consequence, you're going to hear a story about an inspiring, hope-filled beginning. Daniel and Catherine Saxton, they usually go by Dan and Kat, are two young and progressive farmers who now own Pilgrim's Produce, a 14-acre, small-scale, certified organic farm just south of Armstrong and east of Highway 97. In taking this step, they have joined, in my opinion, and the opinion of many people, the vanguard of new young farmers who, the experts are confirming, those who are involved with growing food, are transforming our food system back to its roots. Local, fresh, healthy, and grown by a farmer or farmers you can get to know personally. So Kat and Dan, a warm welcome to Food Conversations.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
It's good terrific to have you here. And we're going to talk about how buying a farm is no small undertaking, but I think you're going to lay out for us how you did it, and the way you did it and how you did it was to move towards it one step at a time, slowly and gradually. So let's start by talking about how to buy a farm the right way, as most would see it and as you have come to do it, this gradual process. So these three features: gradual, involving a group effort, and based on meaningful relationships. I think those were words that you used, Kat, before, when we were talking before the show. So Robert and Catherine Hettler started the farm in 1991. By the way, what was each of your first meeting with the Hettlers? Because it happened at different times. So Kat, what happened?
Yeah, I had a dear friend of mine who was in his 70s named Gil Wise, who said, "You got to meet the Hettlers." And he drove me out here and sort of plunked me on their front steps. And Robert tromped me around the farm in his gumboots. And it was about this time of year and the snow was falling, and gave me a quick guided tour on the farm. And that was my first experience coming to Pilgrim's Produce and meeting Robert and Catherine Hettler.
And do you remember what you thought at the time or what you felt about this experience? I mean, being...
I had no idea what he was talking about. He was like, I remember him saying arugula, and I didn't know what arugula was. This is this vegetable, and I hadn't done that before, so I didn't know what he was talking about. But I knew I was excited. They hired me on the spot to come for the following season, and so I knew I was looking forward to learning a lot on the farm.
The spot is a pretty good start, if you ask me.
Well, it's, you know, yeah.
What about you, Dan?
I guess meeting Kat, she had been working there on and off for a few years, and while we were dating, and then we got engaged and married. I met them like occasionally for supper, and then her last season, I volunteered at the end because I was working somewhere else. So I was already getting paid. So I helped them finish off the season, and we lived in a little wood heated cabin for a couple months into the winter. And yeah,
the start of our marriage and the beginning of your farming experience.
Yeah, that was like also my first little taste of farming.
Well, obviously the taste suited your palate. You're still doing it, and now you're the farm owner. Now, you were connected to the farm for years, but buying it is a whole different matter. And so you, of course, you know, if you just had your first experience on the farm, as you just described, and you didn't know what an arugula was, obviously there was some help needed. But the help, part of it came from your own father, Dan. Your dad was a seminal person in making the process work. Why don't you talk about him?
Yeah, for sure. So he's a chartered accountant, and he knows numbers and thinks in numbers. And the nice thing is he took what we had going here and created a great proposal, not just based on numbers, because he actually, to Farm Credit Canada, he pitched like us, like what Rob and Catherine were doing and what we wanted to do. So he did pitch us too, but he took the numbers. And one of the main things that made it work was Rob and Catherine had an established business. That he could put together a package that could be taken to a lender.
It was essentially a 30-year farm, essentially.
Yeah. So they love that. They love the fact that Rob and Catherine were making a living off this farm. Because if they had wound down maybe earlier, or if it was more of a hobby farm, we wouldn't have had a shot at it. Because there would have been no, like, I guess, financial history to back up us.
What do you know? What do you know about farming? They do say it.
Yeah.
So, Farm Credit Canada, just for listeners, what does the entity Farm Credit Canada do in Sydney?
They are the lender. They're the ones who secured the mortgage for us. Yeah. And they
let us go into a lot of debt on a crazy idea that we're going to make this farming.
Yeah. So, they do that. They offer support and stuff like that too. They ask. They keep on wanting to visit when we're really busy, but I
just haven't really doing what you're doing.
Oh yeah. And they're interested in what we're doing. Cause it was also, I guess, they mostly deal with like, cow calf operations and other things like that. And not as many vegetable farms in Canada, unfortunately. So
what was when the inspectors, I guess they might be called, come to see you, what do they say about the fact that you are doing vegetable farming? It is new. It is expanding a sector that has been neglected for some time.
I don't know. I would like to ask them that. I haven't. That'd be an interesting thing to ask them.
So they don't. They just come whiz through and have a look, and then away they go.
Yeah. Well, we haven't managed to connect yet. We've been too busy.
Something to. So they see that you're out in the field, and they don't want to interrupt the flow because that will ruin their financial status.
Probably.
A couple of people also played important roles. Heather Pritchard and Tessa Thompson. Maybe, Kat, you can sort of say what they did that brought the process forward.
Yep. So as we were, there was just so many meetings and conversations that we had between Hettlers and their family, and then us and then our support network for coming up with a deal. And Heather Pritchard was basically a mediator, and she has years of experience and basically helped us work through, you know, kind of the emotional side of things, like the feelings, the fears, the worries and the doubts and the things that we were looking forward to, and making sure that we were all very clear in communication and what did the Hettlers want to see with us purchasing and taking over the farm? What did we want? What did we need? And Tessa was similar support for us through the Young Agrarians. Tessa is the land matcher. She's basically like a, what does she call herself?
Marriage counselor.
Kind of like a marriage counselor for the two couples, the Hettlers and the Saxons, trying to come together with this big agreement. So Tessa was quite helpful as well with her knowledge to the Young Agrarians.
Just remind listeners that I'm speaking today with Kat and Dan Saxton, co-owners of Pilgrim's Produce Farm. And it's a great conversation about how you buy a farm and how you buy it the right way and how much planning goes into it. What kind of, I mean, fears are inevitable. If you've never owned a piece of property like this, you see a giant pile of debt welcoming you into its ranks. What did you feel at that point? I mean, Kat, you mentioned to me when we were talking about how faith was important, and faith was sort of the idea that whatever happened, it would work out somehow. It would fall into place somehow. What was that kind of process like? What kind of states were the two of you in?
I think that we felt it's more than just, oh, this is a job we want to do, or this is even a lifestyle that we would like. It's even beyond that, in the fact that we feel that God allowed us to use this land, and we have this duty and responsibility to do it in the best way that we can. So I guess there's these fears that we might mess it up somehow. We want to improve this land and continually, you know, produce the best food we can, but, you know, not screw it up and turn it into a big weed lot. So there's just a lot of pressure to make sure that we're doing this the best that we can. And then, yeah, there's fears about the financial end of things. But again, we just felt like if we're called to do this, we feel like God will provide and he'll make a way. And so we'll just do our best and show up each day with our gumboots on. And
yep.
And that's how it'll go.
And Dan said, yep. You're a true farmer, Dan. You're out in the field with your boots on and your hat on.
Yep.
And you say, yep. And then you work like heck all day long.
Right.
So the deal was finally closed. And it's kind of ironic. It was on April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
Was this a deliberate plan to have it on April 1st, 2021?
No. And it, interestingly enough, was exactly 30 years to the day that Rob and Catherine stepped on the farm too. And it was like, I don't know, my dad in the proposal put the timeline from the offer to, and it just happened that way. And it was bizarre.
So the 30-year anniversary was also the first day that we were the official new owners. So that was kind of special.
Now I've learned that chartered accountants have a sense of humor.
They do.
He drug you in to the April Fool's joke. Guess what?
Yeah.
So how did you signal the moment? How did you... Did you have a celebration? Did you have a small glass of champagne?
We had a little bit with, like, Tessa was there and a few others who had really been, they're actually the workers on the farm over the past few years or a few years, like the previous 30 years, as many that could come. Like
there were more celebrations surrounding the Hetlers and celebrating the 30 years that they'd put into this farm.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much us, but their contributions and, you know, all the memories over the years, and they had a few special moments, yeah, some meals and party things, yeah.
Usually you're surrounded with good food and good people.
Yeah.
It was the theme of most of the parties that happen around here.
Yeah, Tessa told me that the main feature of young agrarians' gatherings is the food and the networking. You talk and you eat, and you sometimes eat with your mouth full. And talk with your mouth empty.
Yeah.
Now, neither of you had a sort of formal background in farming, and that's an interesting phenomenon these days, that most of the people that we've interviewed on Food Conversations who are farmers didn't start out as the sons and daughters of farmers, and in fact, the sons and daughters of farmers are often a little gun-shy because they experienced some of the things that happened in the 70s and 80s, farms that were foreclosed, banks that took over farms, and the new mood, if you like, in the land towards farming is something that they're burned already. They've had a little PTSD from what happened back in those decades. But many people like you have come from all sorts of backgrounds. So let's review some of the things that actually ended up being useful skills, but like so many things, you don't know why you're learning them at the time, and you think, well, I don't want to do that forever, but you did anyway. So Dan, you were born in Kelowna, but you were raised across the other side of the Rockies, but you always had a connection to the Okanagan, you said. So how did that work? You're born here, you go there, and you still have Okanagan in your sights, in your blood.
My parents are immigrants from England, and BC is where they landed up. So we've made lots of good family. Like, I have lots of fake aunts and uncles in the Okanagan. And then we'd always come back during the summers. And it was it's a different place than Edmonton, for sure. The fruit and the bounty of this valley is, I think I did recognize that. Like, who didn't love to come here and get some cherries and peaches when you're a kid?
So somewhere when you were about 19, I understand, you came back to this part of the world. What formally brought you back here?
I started going to school at UBCO. It was the first thing. Saw an ad in the paper, and there was like a travel bursary, so I applied and got in, a while ago now.
Already demonstrating a little financial savvy. If they have a bursary, I'll go there. Not exactly. It wasn't any old place. And UBCO was embedded in the Okanagan. So that was a...
Yep.
You called yourself a little bit you know, as sort of your orientation towards the land, a bit of a hunter-gatherer. Why don't you talk about that kind of relationship that you built up with the natural world around you, natural environment?
Yeah, like growing up and then moving to Okanagan, I didn't have any land, obviously. And but we lived on the Shuswap for a couple of years. And if you take the time to notice, there's old abandoned like orchards, and there's cherry trees, crabapple trees, and there's thimbleberries and wild ginger and stuff like that. And we lived there for a couple of years, and it was a pretty quiet place for a good chunk of the year when people go home after the summer. And you would just, I would walk around and keep finding all this stuff out in the forest. And I, you know, I just had a great attention to seeing it changing and finding new ones. And just like free food out in the forest.
So would you read up on it? I mean, obviously, if I don't think Edmonton, did you start doing that when you were living in Edmonton? Were you sort of oriented?
There is a little bit around. It was definitely, people had gardens for sure in Edmonton, but for agriculture, it's often just like cattle and animals and stuff like that. People definitely garden and definitely eat out of the garden. I grew up shelling peas at friends' houses and yeah, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, just I think it was probably always in me.
Yeah, but you, I mean, if you didn't know what wild ginger was, you'd have to identify it. I mean, I think of things like mushrooms. You know, you have to know mushrooms before you pick them. Otherwise, you could have a very sore stomach. So did you?
For sure.
Oh yeah, we have a lot of field guides and different books to identify things, and we would always be poring over them. And
Well, one of my courses while we were dating was I would have to go and find plant samples and press them, and she always made fun of me. Like I was just, you're just going for a hike and
doing arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts. But like that was one of my courses at UBCO was plant identification. Yeah. So I had like a big stack of wild plants pressed. So, and we got one of our textbooks was the plants of the interior of British Columbia. Can't remember who the author is, but yeah.
So. Yeah, it's obviously a really good introduction to a more naturalistic kind of farming rather than, you know, monocultural approaches and that kind of thing. Now, Kat, you were born on the other side of the country. Far away from here in Europe, this would be in another continent. In Strathroy, Ontario, what was Strathroy like when you were growing up?
I was born in Strathroy. I grew up outside of that little town in Mount Bridges, which is a wee little hamlet, not even on the map. And we lived in a rural area, but we weren't really farmers. My dad had a little garden. My grandpa had a garden, so that was sort of inspiring. But yeah, I wasn't really super involved. I was always out roaming about the fields and gathering berries and mashing up old corn that was left over and making things. But I think I was always, I was into gardening as a child, but I didn't have that much exposure.
You said something when you were talking before the show. You said something about saving up your money to buy a farm when you were 12.
That's right. I started working at 12 years old. I started babysitting full time. And then at 14, I started working in the summers in greenhouses in the cut flower industry. And I was always had this idea that I would buy a farm, purchase, you know, have a house, have a husband and children. That was my goal. So I've always been kind of frugal and able to save. So that's what I was saving for at 12 years old.
Well, that's
and it took that long to accumulate enough money to buy this place.
Well, it's interesting because when you went to school, Dan, at UBCO, you took a long time to go through your schooling, longer than the sort of prescribed period of time. It was not one of these things where you just automatically say, okay, I'll finish my degree and then move on. It was a protracted process.
No, it didn't happen that way. I started off in like business program, tried engineering, and then just the way the cards fell with like the other courses I was taking, I was more interested in geography and environmental science type courses, like human geography, so how people interact with each other and the world, and then physical geography, and just seeing how they are all pretty tied together and important.
Yes, there are a number of books written recently about how the ecosystem shapes us rather than us shaping the ecosystem. And we've kind of got into a mistaken understanding of things, that somehow we are the ones that make things happen when we're just little tiny cogs in a very giant wheel. Now, both of you had lots of different kinds of work experience. You mentioned Kat doing cut flower farming when you were just a teenager. 2 years after you had decided to buy a farm, you were handling cut flowers. What other kinds of things do you do? There's food processing, greenhouse. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you kind of wandered around the employment world trying different things?
Yes, I had a difficult time nailing down what I wanted to do in school. It seems like everyone after high school, you should go to university or college. And I did for 1 year. And I realized it didn't fit me. So I decided that I would just start searching out career or jobs and learning what I was interested in. So I did, the cut flower industry. I worked in custom picture framing. I did industrial food. It was a huge factory, basically, kind of like Green Giant Food. So I worked there in a scale house with trucks and giant amounts of vegetables. And
Do you remember having a feeling there that was something you didn't want to do either?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't want to do that forever. That's for sure. And then I came out to BC as a teenager and started working in the tree industry. So yeah, just little wee trees.
Well,
and then I also did ranching for a couple of years with cattle and sheep. And I worked here at this farm doing vegetables. So, yeah.
I would mention also that many guests have said the same thing, that they knew that they wanted to do something, but it wasn't the things that they were doing for a very long time. There was often 10, 15 years before they sort of settled down. Dan, you also worked in a variety of settings. Some trades, customer service, hospitality. Why don't you talk about that background? Because a lot of these things end up being useful without you realizing at the time.
Yeah, for sure. Like house construction and being able to build and put together structures was definitely helpful. And learning a little bit of all the other trades that go with that, electrical and heating, for heating a greenhouse and being able to fix a furnace and stuff like that was pretty important. So lots of the practical sides of it, and then hospitality and sales and stuff like that. I actually worked in the radio industry at one point, and for radio stations.
Us?
And
you
I was definitely on the back end, and I was doing sales, and I would have to phone radio stations all over North America and try and like get them to buy what we're selling. And I do a lot of customer service and talking to people at the farmer's market. It's on a different scale and a different pace, but yeah, just learning, interacting with people and having a product that I valued. I thought it was a really neat product I was selling. And I definitely think the vegetables I'm selling are very important and great too. So
formal education for both of you was kind of an intrusion into your plans, but a necessary or maybe in some respects a useful one. Dan, you, as you said, you ultimately completed a BA in Geography and Environmental Science at UBCO. And it took you that 10 years because you kept on starting something, saying, oh, that's not right, and starting something else. And Kat, you were doing something like that as well. You were starting different things, but knowing that it wasn't the right thing. There's pretty good evidence that that enhances your capacity to deal with different kinds of situations later on in life. Even though you're at the time thinking, this is not where I'm going to land, it does end up being something. And you were a good student, Kat. You branched into a number of areas and you could have done well in them, one of which was nursing, which is interesting. What drew you in and then propelled you out of a career in nursing?
I still find human anatomy pretty neat and just the sciences. So I think that's where I thought, okay, I'm interested in this. Maybe I should pursue nursing. I did 1 year of college in pre-health science and I did quite well. I was top of my class, but I didn't want to be stuck in a building and maybe dealing with sick people all the time. I knew that I preferred to be outdoors and, that's where I felt more like me and alive. So I think I decided, okay, I'm not going to keep going at this one.
The thing about nursing too is it's all indoors. Nobody has a nursing clinic out in a field.
I know, and I think that's where I realized that I would feel suffocated. Like, oh my goodness, I'm actually going to be stuck inside all the time, and I wouldn't do well there under fluorescent lighting. Ah.
Having been under fluorescent lighting for 46 years off and on in a hospital, I second your opinion on that subject. Just remind listeners that I'm listening, that we have as guests today Dan and Kat Saxton, who are co-owners of Pilgrim's Produce Farm. It's, of course, everybody knows that's a play on words, Pilgrim's Produce, Pilgrim's Progress. And Pilgrim's Progress, the actual original story by John Bunyan, is about going through trials and tribulations, but eventually kind of coming out with a sense of security and faith, as we talked about earlier. Dan, in your travels, you said modestly, well, I didn't do anything that interesting, but both of you did some traveling, but you ended up at one point aware of or studying or watching permaculture operations in Panama. Now that's it seems to me of some relevance to your current situation. How did you end up there?
So I'm friends with a teacher at Cal School, and well, we're really good friends with their whole family, all the kids in the family. So Dave Fair runs a program called Students Without Borders Academy, and it was the very first year, and I was at university. And he needed a chaperone. So this is one of the reasons why school took longer. So I did my first semester, and then I dropped out, I guess, if that's the right. Yeah, that's probably the right term. And then I went to as a chaperone for these high school students down to Panama. It was 5 weeks in Panama, and we toured all these. He's very passionate about this kind of stuff, too. All these like certified coffee bean plantations, and then there's this one place where they had a greenhouse that had a tilapia pond that was like all connected and hydroponically like growing all this food for these. It was at an orphanage actually for these kids. It was very interesting, and I hadn't seen any of that before, like ever.
What you hadn't seen was the permaculture sort of operations or orphanages.
Well, both. What a great idea. Like feeding people right there, like instead of having to bring in food. And yes, the permaculture, that was 2009. And I don't think I'd heard or read much about any of that before. And they had fruit trees and all that kind of stuff.
So it was a sort of a model of a mixed culture farm, a farm that was not just rows and rows and rows of crop foods in a big mass.
Yeah, it was very creative.
Yes, exactly. Now, Kat, you were a little more adventuresome in your traveling. You left this continent and went to some other parts of the world. India. What took you to India? I'm sure you didn't just say, oh, I think I'll go to India.
No, I actually really wanted to go backpacking in Europe with my friend. The first time I went to India, I went there three times overall. But the first time I went, I had a best friend that we were going to travel together with. And we had met some people through our church who have basically orphanages and a huge missionary operation going on there. So they invited us to come out, and we said, okay. So I went to India, and it's wild there. It's very different.
India is often known as a very spiritual country, a country that where your spiritual aspirations are taken very seriously. They're not sort of marginalized and sequestered in certain places. Did you sense that when you were there, or was it just too different?
Oh, for sure. It was quite interesting because just looking at most people, you can tell what religion, what they're going after. If they're Hindus or Muslims or Christian, you can tell by just their appearance alone. So that was quite interesting because you can't really identify people and their faith necessarily in Canada that way. Sort of embedded and also, yeah, it's let's see, I think it takes more priority in their lives as well. It's sort of like do or die, maybe, in some cases, that's for real.
Absolutely. New Zealand. Now, that's a country that's got some topographical similarities to British Columbia. Lots of mountains, you know, lots of farming. Did you start setting your plans for buying a farm in New Zealand? In that part of the world?
No, I didn't. I didn't think to buy a farm there, but I was a part of a large garden. I was at kind of like a camp facility, and there was a huge garden there. So that was quite fun to grow things in a different setting and harvest avocados and lemons. And we were, you know, supplying a kitchen that was feeding 200 people a day. So that was quite fun in New Zealand as well.
And along these travels, you were also in your mind traveling along a path towards a kind of lifestyle that you felt was right for you, including self-sufficiency, growing food for yourself, connecting to community. Why don't you talk about how that was growing in your mind, that sense of what you really did want to do?
Sure. I have a very vivid memory of sitting in India on my bed in the middle of the night. It's the only time when it is quiet there because it is just so packed with people on this campus where I was living. And in the middle of the night, I was drawing it out, this whole idea of what I was hoping life would be and maybe what I felt God was calling me to. But, you know, there's a little picture of a tractor and a farm and a husband and children and a dog and beehives and all these things, food, growing, garden. And that was sort of long before it ever came to fruition. That was this dream planted in my heart. So, yeah, that was a long time ago.
Well, this sometimes things that happened a long time ago end up having a big role in your current life. And that's obviously how things have turned out, which is obviously a good thing. Now, at some point along this road, the two of you got together, and you got together in an interesting fashion. And Dan, tell us about a certain driveway, a driveway experience.
Okay, so I guess we had a Cupid kind of connect us. And I'd seen her around a little bit and sort of knew who she was, but she had zero clue who I was. And I think there was probably about 6 or 7 other people named Dan in the larger friend group. So it could have been any one of those who would have pulled up in the driveway at that moment. But so she met me in the driveway of her little old farmhouse that she was living in with a friend.
And then you took a step that everyone listening to this show should take note of. It's how to court a young woman and make sure that you're going to have a spectacularly positive result. Talk about a little bit of wood chopping. Well, chopping, probably sawing.
Yeah, so I guess a little bit of both. I guess my romantic gesture was within the first couple, weeks of knowing her, she was living in this old, really cold farmhouse with a fireplace. So I got a truck and got it all set up and got a couple cords of wood for her to stay warm for the winter. And that was my first romantic gesture, I guess.
Yep. Not roses and chocolate, but a cord of firewood.
And what was your response to a load of firewood from one of the many Dans who could have been bringing it?
It was pretty awesome. I thought that was pretty great that he wanted to take care of me and look after me, and he's still doing that. We've been getting firewood just the last few weeks, so he's still doing that for me, keeping me warm.
You set up a pattern, Dan, and it's continued to this day. When in doubt, if things are going a little sour, go out and chop some firewood and
get some firewood. Will be okay.
Takes you right back. Now, of course, both of you,
as long as it doesn't turn into a dozen.
You know, everybody's on their own path. So you both became involved with the Hettlers, and that each in your own way. Dan, you began working there about 7 years ago, I understand, but you started off small and you gradually built up your engagement with the farm. Talk about that a little bit. It was quite an orderly process almost.
Yeah, I guess quite orderly when we look back at it. The first year I was just a regular minimum wage employee with no extra responsibilities before and after work. And at the same time, there's another young guy, a couple, Mark and Carolyn Ewer, who have a great farm in Mara Valley Produce. he was in the process of starting his farm up in a different location that summer.
And working here.
So I had the privilege of like learning from Rob and then also a peer, which is great because sometimes you learn better from someone your own age. So I got to learn from Rob and Mark that first summer. And by the end of the summer, Mark was really engaged in his new farming venture, and very similar farm to ours. And so I had to really step up, and I was taking a lot of the responsibility to get like seeding done in my first year of farming and stuff like that. I'd definitely been coached along the way, but by the end, I was filling in for where he was leaving off. Yeah, so then the next year, Tessa, who we've mentioned already, she and her partner at the time, Joel, we co-managed the farm together. So this is like another step where I'm still not fully responsible, which is great because it's still a lot of learning going on. So we co-managed the farm. We really ramped it up, and we're doing markets in Kelowna as well, and we're really trying to see what we could do like as like four motivated like adults with some age in our favor. So we did that, and then it was a good season, and then the next year was my first year like managing the vegetable side of the thing, of the farm. Ordering seeds, I still sat down on the raw.
Was there a little bit of a plan going on here? I mean, I know you said it seems more orderly in retrospect, but it does sound pretty orderly. You know, you're expanding your... Obviously, the Hetlers felt that you had material, if you like to call it that, to do these kinds of things. They appreciated your presence, and they wanted you to participate.
I think after the first season, I think I recognized that I really liked doing it for a living. And I don't know how soon after we started talking to them about the long term, like what should we do? It probably was that first winter, but it was very casual and there was no rush at all. We were not trying to get this figured out right away. So then we just, we were thinking about, we had other options, I guess, for the second season, but then Joel and Tess, it just really happened naturally with them wanting to come back and doing it together. So that was great. She had been farming, and she's got tons of farming experience. And Joel had been on this farm for quite a few years too. So I was learning tons from them. Again, peer learning is great sometimes. And then we just every winter the talks kind of, I guess, ramped up and increased, trying to figure out, okay, we're here, we're starting to invest like years of our lives into this farm, and what are we going to do about it? And then Rob and Catherine also, they don't want to have the responsibility to hire workers or to pay the bill. Like they didn't want that. So they were trying to go the other way. So it just naturally every year we added more responsibility onto our plate. And then they were taking it off, and still Rob still works on the farm and still puts in effort and gives me advice, which is great that they're still living on the farm.
So this process was almost, dare I use the term, organic. I mean, it really was. It was the same thing, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, not a lot of any one thing at any one time, just sort of gradually moving ahead. Now, Kat, you'd worked for the Hetlers for a decade and a half nearly.
Yeah, I started out, so after that friend Gil brought me to their doorstep, I started the following spring just working on the farm. I worked for two or three full seasons, I can't even quite remember, but I worked here for several years just as an employee, but also there weren't a lot of workers, and so I got a broad spectrum of jobs, and you know, there was responsibility on our laps just as a regular worker. We had to be in charge of, you know, what came back from market and how many should we harvest this week, and just being in charge of customers and all kinds of things like that. So it was a really great exposure to the big picture. I wasn't exactly involved so much in all the tractor work and the planting and that sort of thing, but I was involved in other ways. Rob, I had a few years of greenhouse operations experience, and so Rob just handed that over to me. Okay, you look after the six greenhouses and run that, and I was happy to. That was fun to have that responsibility. So yeah, I worked here for a couple of years and just worked alongside them at the beginning of my experience with them.
So when did the conversations about taking on the farm begin, and how did they begin?
I think the year that we were getting married, I was working here again. I was back here again working full-time. I'd kind of gone off and done other things, ranching and other jobs and traveling. But the year that Dan and I got married, we were back here sort of together again. And I think that's where the first idea sort of was put out there. But we decided to go to the shoe swap, and so that was off the table again. And then I think about 2 years later, I remember them coming to our place in the shoe swap and having a meal, and then that's where the idea kind of was put out there. You know, what would you guys think about moving back and seeing if this worked? And I think that's where we started going, yeah, like we were getting ready to move on from where we were, and well, that sounded like a neat opportunity, so we gave it a go.
So was there a sort of a rush of blood to your head when both of you, when this was proposed, or had you been already thinking about it enough that it just more blended in with your way of thinking about things? Dan, what do you think?
He never gets that excited about anything, so I don't think there was that rush of blood to his head.
No, I don't think it was a crazy announcement that was out of the blue. Yeah, it just sort of happened through the relationship, because we kept in touch with them while we were at the camp doing that job.
Yeah.
We never lost contact. It was a relationship. And we go there in the winter. Most of our friends lived in Vernon, so we would often come back on the weekends, and we would sleep in the room right above us when we came to visit. So there's always the relationship never stopped, even though we were not involved with the farming at all.
So let's say you're having this conversation with the Hetlers, and you're talking about possibly buying the farm. How did you know this was something that you could really make work? I mean, obviously, in the real world, you never know anything absolutely, but when did you have a sense that this was a go, that this could move forward? Dan, Kat, you can... Anyone can answer?
Yeah, I think for me, for me, it was just a good fit with my personality and spatially, and just a long-term investment in a place. And I could start seeing that right away, just like the things that you do don't matter just this season, but they're going to matter next year for small things. And then some things like trees, Rob planted some trees 15 years ago that still haven't fruited. Like pine nuts, they take a very long time to produce a nut. So just a very long-term investment. And it's not, our world is often a bit fast-paced and flaky. And I think for mental health, it's not very, very good. And as stressful and as crazy as this job can be, it's still very grounded and rooted. And it's, I think, better for my mental health doing a job like this.
Well, now there's actual research showing that being out in a natural environment, and even though it's altered because it's a farm to some degree, it's nevertheless a naturalistic kind of farm. And I'm sure you've heard the term forest bathing, which is a translation from the Japanese, and it's a term that indicates how beneficial it is to be out in the natural world, surrounded by growing things. And it conveys something to us that's really very powerful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Kat, did you and Rob have a conversation saying, I think we should buy the farm, and you said, oh no, or oh yes, or how did that go from your angle?
Oh, let's see. Well, we always, like Rob and Catherine and their family, I think moving out from Ontario as a single woman, I became a part of their family and several others as well. They sort of adopted me in as the daughter. And so their children didn't necessarily want to farm, although they definitely value this place to continue. Rob and Catherine had this desire to have it carry on in a similar fashion. They worked so hard for 30 years to establish this place in the community. And it's so important and special, this farm and the people that are all a part of it. So I think that it just sort of naturally fit that I could have the, I don't know, even a privilege to be able to continue this. I feel like it's just an honor to get to be doing this. I don't know if that answered your question exactly.
But. Well, no, it answers it very well. The Rotary Club talks about sweat equity. In other words, you work hard to make something happen. You don't just say, oh, that's a great idea. And in a way, you are very aware of the sweat equity that the Hettlers had put into this farm. And you knew how much love and attention they devoted to it. And it's quite obvious that would be something you could not ignore, because you've been participating in it for a number of years yourselves. Let's talk a little bit about the values that underline the farm. And I went to the website that you've put up, Kat, and there's some things that you said on it that I think are very germane to the discussion we're having now. And I'm just going to quote something. Recognizing that the ecosystems which surround us are more complex and dynamic than most of us understand, we seek to work with the natural world as much as possible. Now, that's kind of summarizing a lot of things that we meet talking about, but maybe, I guess, Kat, you wrote the words, but Dan, maybe you could describe how that resonates for you and why it's important.
Yeah, there's a lot that we don't know, and a lot of what we do is based on assumptions that we know best, especially long-term thought processing. And it's just to take time to be aware of what is going on around us when it comes to birds and bees and moose and deer, from top to bottom, is really important, because it's all connected and related to each other.
Sort of a sit back and observe, and then try to humbly fit yourself in your agenda. Although we want to grow this food, sometimes it is really annoying. Like, there's potato beetles just decimating your potatoes, or, you know, there's the natural world coming in. And as much as we welcome it, we do. It's also a hard dance and balance, which we're always just trying to like observe and sort of figure out how do we fit in and what we're trying to do, and how much do we just have to sit back and go, okay, go ahead, robins, just have at the cherries, you know. It's a challenging thing, but there's lots of inspiration out there and tools to try and figure that out, to how to do it together nicely.
It's remarkable how close what we're talking about right now is to Indigenous values. Mm. In terms of the relationship of all Indigenous peoples around the world, but obviously in this part of the world too, where the land and the forces of nature and the elements of nature are everything, and we are just trying to understand it and adapt to it rather than shape it and force it into a mold that we've created. That sounds like something like what you're saying, does it not?
For sure, and I hope that we can, you know, in our perspective, the earth is the Lord's, and it's His, and we are doing our best to, I guess, steward it and take the best care. But in the, you know, we're not First Nations ourselves of that heritage, but I hope that we can honor this land and in the way that we farm, and even just the way that we think about this place. I hope that we can be a blessing to the community in that way, you know.
Yeah. And even if, for me and like my religious faith, like Christianity, seeing that Adam was told to name the animals and that was his first job, you can't name something without knowing it, and you have to know things, and we still don't, like, we're still discovering things all the time. Mm-hmm. we're still at the naming phase of our role on this planet, and we feel like we're way past that.
I'll remind listeners once again that I'm speaking with Dan and Kat Saxton, co-owners of Pilgrim's Produce Farm. And we're talking about the essential principles behind the farm and the way you're operating it. And speaking of grounding, there's a quote here that I think is quite relevant to that. And this is it. It takes good, healthy soil, biologically active, to produce nutrient-dense plants which will result in healthy people. Now, that's about as grounded as you can get. Kat, what were you thinking of when you wrote that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of food out there that's sort of empty in real nutrients. It might look the same. It might be still, if we're talking lettuce, it might still be green lettuce, but it doesn't have any value to it in terms of what it can do to our bodies. And so I think we really value food that is healthy. And that's why we are doing this organically. And, you know, in the cut flower industry, I worked with massive loads of chemicals, and they would drive by the tractors and the sprayers. And, you know, you're just hoping your kids don't turn out with four eyeballs because the amount of chemicals that I was exposed to. And I realized, you know, for my own children, I literally will plunk them down in the field with me. And I don't care if they put the dirt in their mouth because it's healthy, and I'm not afraid that they're going to be sick. And also for the people in our community, it's not just for us. It's everyone. We know that this is good food, and we're constantly trying to improve the quality of the soil and, you know, with good organic practices so that it will be super nutrient dense.
Well, science is on your side as well as common sense. Dan, you're in charge of the soil much of the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As much as I can be.
And that's so this would be a statement that would resonate very much with your work and your perspective.
Yeah. I try and go at it long term again. It's not just this year's crop. It's putting in as many cover crops as I can into the soil, so there's always organic matter being built up, and rotating crops around the farm from left to right, north to south, like as far apart good crops and bad crops. Some crops are like, I throw in beans. If I don't know what I should plant there, and if it's bare, I'm like, okay, I need to cover the soil. The soil loves to be covered. It doesn't like to be naked and brown. Plant something, and worst case, we have sheep, we'll let them eat it, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting that...
Yeah, so long-term building the soil, because it'll pay off.
Yeah, it's interesting that vegetation is, some people have likened it to a bandage to cover the wounds we make on the planet, and the more we bandage it, the healthier it is. Now, we haven't talked about it, but there are four young humans on this property who are your children, and they obviously play a role in your lives of high significance. How does that affect your lives? Obviously, I can say it makes it extremely busy, but also how does it affect your lives in terms of what we've just been talking about? You know, finding a place for good things to happen, healthy things to happen, grounded things to happen.
Okay. Yeah, we have four young children. Our oldest is 8, youngest is just over 1, and it is such a special thing for them to get to be rooted and grounded in this place. You know, they know the apple tree with the cool conch that's growing on it, and they are tasting the food. They're also involved in helping harvest and wash and sell and market. Like, they're all part of it. And it's a really neat opportunity and a lifestyle which we just absolutely love. We have a built-in, like, all the irrigation is like a good water park in the middle of summer, and it's just a really fun place for them to get to be free and go outside and play, and we really value that as well.
Dad. Yeah, and we have some customers that have almost held, like, most of our children as infants, and, like, yeah, they're really connected to our family, which is great.
We're going to come to a close shortly, and I want to bring forward another quotation from your website, and it's a remark made by one of your customers. And in part, this person says, "I appreciate knowing the people who grow our food. It makes the meal taste richer." Now, if there was any way to summarize everything you do, I can't think of a better way. That's like an engagement between you and somebody for whom food is what they take away from your property. That couldn't be a more heartwarming way to describe what you're doing. What do you think, Dan? Is that, will this bring a shred of emotion to your face?
Yeah, no, it's definitely worth it for that. If I had to ship our food to another country and just it was gone, I don't think it wouldn't work for me. It's nice to see the end result is at the end of my hand when I pass it off, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kat, you put that quotation.
Makes it. Yeah, it's very fulfilling. It feels like an honor when we get those little emails or handwritten cards or people just, you know, telling us at the market or wherever, you know, that they really appreciate the food and getting to know us. This farm is yes, it's ours to look after and take care of, but it's also the communities. We don't feel like it's ours. It's the communities and all the people who eat from it. It's theirs as well. So, yeah, it's an honor to get to share it.
And it's been a delight to have you on the show today, and we're going to have another show where we're going to talk about the farm and its daily operations and the nuts and bolts of running a farm in our next show. Thank you very much, Kat and Dan, for being on today, and look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks.